and recognize the elements that they're trying to use the child for in terms of their own lives, and every parent is going to have that, and they have to look into that and have to recognize it and understand what those things are and what they're prone to, provided that they do that and they eliminate that, I think that their judgment with regard to the child will be good. They can rely on their own judgment. Usually it will be proper if you remove the other elements of their own personality. I mean, that's my opinion, yes. I think at any stage. But I cannot say, you know, there may be certain situations, rare situations, which, you know, call for, you know, for different measures. In general, I would say that, right, that it should be avoided. It should be an even education at all times. Again, you know, not one in which you cater totally to the child, and not one which is totally restrictive. It has to be, but without restriction is not good. Right? Now, the question is, what do you do with it? Like, again, one sibling, you know, harms the other sibling. It has to be stopped. It has to be stopped through very firm action, but not through telling the child that how could you do this to your brother or your sister? You know, this is a horror. This is a terrible thing. That is a very, very dangerous and very bad thing to do. Because then you're really labeling the child with guilt and just setting them up for problems later in life. But restrictive, firm, that's extremely important. I think, in my opinion, you could do it without hitting the child. I think so. Because I think in hitting the child, you see, I think one of the most important things in raising a child is, like for instance, one of the questions I think here was how the child talks to the parent. The child is exceedingly fresh, okay? So, and children can be that way. And the thing is that you have to, again, you have to go into the child's mind, into the world of the child. A child can say the most horrible things to a parent, but you must realize that those things are horrible if an adult would say them to you. All right. So you always must keep in mind who is saying it and what the level of frustration of the child at the time that they said it is. All these things, again, you've got to go into the mind of the child. And most of the times, I think if you do, you realize that it's just nonsensical to really be affected by that at all. But what is proper is to teach the child a proper way of speaking to someone through your own example. And that means that you should speak to the child in a respectful way. Okay? I mean, that's extremely important. It is not going to work. If you're going to speak down to the child and expect the child to speak up to you, it just doesn't work. You have to be, the child sees that this is, and if a child is disrespectful, then you could say, this is not the way to talk to a mother. This is not the way to talk to a father. And you can restrict the child, make the child go to their room or whatever, and that's it. You know, I do not think it's good to hit a child, because in hitting a child, I think you're setting a bad example. You're setting a bad example. And that's why I don't think it's good. But I think there are other methods. I'm saying there are other methods that you could use in restricting is much more forceful. Restricting, also ignoring, is very good. This is another thing I want to mention, that many times, a child deserves much more credit for intelligence than we think. And a child is capable of playing with the strings of the mother. Or the father. They know they could. A child can have the parent's number. And there's no question about it. But a lot of times, a lot of times the parent thinks that they do and they're making a mistake, because that could be a projection also. You could think the child's really, but it is true that a child can know how to,
push the button.
There's no question about it. The thing to do with that is, if that is happening, the proper reaction is to be indifferent. In other words, don't let the child act out. The child at that point is trying to act out a certain scenario. Don't give him the satisfaction of acting out that scenario. You see? Just be indifferent. Don't let them do that. Because if you let them do that, if you let them play your strings, then I mean you're doing a bad thing for the child. You're allowing them to act out things which should not be acted out, but which they should have to cope with in their own minds. Because the child also has to cope in their own way, just like we do. Just like adults have to cope with their own emotions, the child has to cope with their emotions. When you allow them to act it out, you're stopping them from that, because they're acting it out instead of really working it out. What you want them to do is to work it out, not act it out. So therefore, a lot of times the parent becomes a tool of the child in acting out. That is something which should be avoided. And the way to avoid it, essentially, is not to beat up the child, but if you're indifferent, you'll stop it. If you're indifferent, you'll stop it in a very good way. Because the indifference, you're not going to have to act towards the child in a way that you're setting a bad example, and you're not going to give the child satisfaction. And even if you did react in a way where you hit the child, it's also bad, because the negative is very bad too. You see, the negative is also a way that the child is pulling your strings, because it's getting a reaction out of you. The proper reaction is indifference. Okay? That's good. That's very good. No, there's nothing wrong with that. When you're ignoring it, the child knows you're ignoring it. Knows it's not an okay thing to do. It's not an okay thing to do. The child knows it's not an okay thing to do. By ignoring, you're giving two messages. You're giving a message that it's not okay, and you're giving a message that you're not affected. See, that's really what's good. That's why it's very good. So you're giving two messages at the same time. It's not good, because you're turning away from the child, and it's not affecting you. And I want you to know that when you that these things are very subtle. In other words, you shouldn't ignore a child in a way where the child perceives you're trying to get back at them by ignoring them. That's also, it has to be done in a proper way, where the child perceives that you're moving away from them, but not because you're trying to get back to them. Okay, that their behavior is causing you to move away. To move yourself away from them emotionally, but yet you're not trying to get back at them. That's bad. That's why, again, hitting is no good. It's hitting is getting back. You see, I'm not saying that there's no instances in which different behavior would be appropriate. But I'm saying in general. I'm talking about yes. Okay. And how much do we give to the schools, and how much do we retain for ourselves, our own obligation, raising the children of Derech HaTorah. Okay, I mean, my answer is that you really, to speak generically, you really should give nothing to the schools. Everything should remain with you. That's my opinion. In other words, when I say that, what I mean is that the vigilance is yours. The responsibility is yours. The school could be a vehicle within that framework of accomplishing your goal. But you really can't relinquish anything. That's not it. You can't relinquish anything to the school. Everything is your. It's your child. If a school is being helpful, that's just a vehicle of your own vigilance and your own responsibility. And you could be fortunate that they could be relieving you of some of the activity and the input that you'd be have to make, but it's still yours. You see, there's no such thing as relinquishing. I'm sending my child to school, and the child's going to become a Talmid Chacham. If you do that, I think you're minimizing the chances, because it's everything is at home. And if the school, insofar as the school is failing, you have to pick up the slack. And insofar, in other words, if the school is teaching in a way where ideas aren't being presented properly, you have to be there and correct it. Okay? If the school is involved in distorting your child's mind because the Rebbe answers questions that they don't know the answers to, and that's why they just try to break down the categories of the question in the child's mind, this could be seriously harmful. So you have to correct that. You have to always be there. You have to always be there. You may be fortunate and your input will be less, and you may be not fortunate and you'll have to have a major input. But you can never relinquish your role chinuch to a school. I can't speak in individual cases. I would just say that in general, if a person from, you know, has a situation and the proper situation, the proper opportunities, that a child will always remain essentially under the sphere of the parents. That's the way it will be. And unless the parent, you know, simply abdicates their role, then the child's going to. But if the parent does not abdicate their role from early youth and is an integral part of the child's, the child always turns to the parents are the most important figures in the child's life. No one else is as important. And therefore, you have the reins and you have the control. And if you don't abdicate, then your role will not be minimized. Well, I mean, that's in a very important, that's an extremely important point. I don't know if we mentioned it last time, but I would say that the most disastrous thing you can do in front of a child is for parents to be at odds. I mean, and I think that's something that obviously, you know, is not possible 100%, I mean, to ever avoid. I mean, it's just virtually impossible. But I think that if parents, you know, have a good relationship, then they have difficulties, they have differences, that they really should have enough control to discuss these differences in private and not to expose the child to their battles, because it's a very, very, very detrimental thing to a child. I think that's something that's correct, that the child should perceive a harmony between the parents. I mean, it's unfortunate. Sometimes that harmony doesn't exist, and the child pays the price. I mean, there's a very. I mean, if the home is a broken home, it's difficult. You have to just do everything you can around that situation, but it's not a good situation. I mean, there's no question about it. Right. That's right. No matter what a child says to a parent or somebody, there's no verbalization that a child could make that the parent should look at, wow, like how could the child say that? You know what I mean? That is completely wrong. Okay, that kind of an attitude, that goes back to what I mentioned last time of the little man or a little woman attitude, which means that a child is a miniature adult. How could they say that? You know what I mean? That is completely, no matter what a child says, doesn't mean a thing in terms of our framework. It means something in terms of the child, and you have to look into it in that way. But to look at it as if it were an adult statement is completely out of the realm of reality. Yeah. No, they know what they're talking about. A child knows very well what they're talking about. But you don't know what they're talking about. What? They know what they're doing. Question is, it's one of the questions actually. When a young child asks about God, okay, that is a very difficult thing. That's a very difficult thing. You cannot explain God in any way which is against the Torah, like to say, to give him false ideas that God is like a big daddy in the sky or something like that. Can't do that. But what you can do is, see, it's not bad. It's not bad for a child, again, frustration is not a bad thing. It's not bad for a child to be frustrated and to know they can't understand God. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, is God like this? No, he's not that, isn't it? And I think what's important is to give examples. Like you say, Charlie, well, God sees. Does Hashem have eyes? You see? No. Well, how does he see? Okay? So you say, well, you show them like a bat. A bat could see, doesn't have a sense of sight, is not really very developed. But it could sense through radar. There's a difference through sound, So you could show them other things that work differently, and then say, and then it opens up their mind to the idea that, oh, there's another way. So this isn't the only way. Well, Hashem doesn't have this, he doesn't have that. There's another way. See? So I think that if you handle it intelligently and you show by, as the, I think the Rambam's principle in the Mor Nevuchim, which is true for the greatest philosopher, is also true for a child, that what we have in relationship to God is negative knowledge. Okay? Negative knowledge. So I think the process of negative knowledge can start from early on. And even though so without, it's not necessary to satisfy the child's curiosity and present an idea of God which is false. That is not right. It's not correct to do. But what a person should do is the child's going to be frustrated, and we are too, because we know that insofar as the Yiras Hashem, it's all negative. So, but we live with that frustration. The child could also live with that frustration. But I think it's very good to give examples. Now, to give examples, it's not this. Oh, well, how's that possible? Well, you see, this works that way, it's not that way. Oh, so but Hashem is different. You see? And then the child gets older, you could say, well, take a look at you think of a person like the Grams, you know, a person made a clock, and he made a clock today, and he wound it up, and the clock will go for a week. Do you think in 2 days they would know what time it is? Yes. Without looking at the clock? Yes. Oh, so you see, you could know what time it is without seeing the clock. You see? So you give them an idea, you know, that of how Hashem could have knowledge by showing that knowledge isn't restricted to the ways we ordinarily think it's restricted. So it's negative knowledge. You could definitely take them through the route of negative knowledge on their level. Okay? That's how I'd answer that question. But in terms of Hashem's actions, there it could be positive. That Hashem does chesed for us, and He gives us everything, and you know, all the positive aspects of chesed Hashem, and that Hashem is concerned about us, all these things you should do. But in terms of Hashem Himself, you see, that has to be. So the positive should be in terms of the Maaseh Hashem, Maaseh Elokeinu. I mean, that's the whole beauty of the piyut. They have a tremendous amount of Maaseh Elokeinu and nothing about HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself. But that's our whole philosophy, whole hashkafa. So that hashkafa should be done in terms of, for the child, you know, on the child's level, and it can be done. Okay, you shouldn't distort the truth, because again, it's very bad. Even if you would distort the truth, then when the child grows older and knows you told him a lie, that itself is a very bad thing. That itself is a bad thing. The child loses its trust in the parent when it sees the parent has lied. So if you present a false idea of Hashem to a child of 5, they won't forget it. And then when they're 10, they see you told them a lie. So not only was it a bad thing at the time, but it's bad in terms of the relationship with the child. Should not tell, the Chazal say, should not lie to a child. But if a child says, Hashem is up there, you don't have to correct them. I think, well, matter of fact, Gemara says it. You don't have to, it's a sign that they know that it's not the same as here. Something different. That's good. They already know. That's a Chazal say it's good. Because it means, you know, something different. Can you be up there? No. Hashem's up there. So, obviously, he's above us. So any idea of being above us, you see, is good. That's good. That's wonderful. You understand? You don't have to correct the child. The child says and say, no, it doesn't mean he's there because he's not physical. You understand? You have to be a bal seichel, and you have to understand that in the child's framework, that's really a negative. They're really expressing a negative because they're saying, I can't be there, but Hashem is up there. He's hard. So that's good. The fact is, in terms of the world of physics, they're really, you know, saying something that's incorrect. You have to, you have to have the seichel to be mechanchi child according to the child's level. You shouldn't tell the child Hashem is, you know, up there in this place. That would be wrong. But you understand the thing? You have to have the seichel to understand that in the child's framework, this is a negative, which is good. This is the child's negative knowledge. Okay? You understand? For us, that wouldn't be appropriate. But for the child, they're expressing the idea of a negative. In other words, this is not like us. It's different. That's good. I think you don't have to really have a program. I think the child will always ask themselves. Yeah.
Going back to the situation where the child says, I'm a murderer, you
I would say that, I mean, again, you can't judge every situation because every situation is, they're different situations. But in general, I would say that, what does it want to say? Chazal say, I mean, the advice of Chazal is the best advice you could have. Chazal say, a person should not be meratza chavero b'shas kasa. A person's angry at you, it's not the time to go over and try to appease them. You know, in other words, when a person's in a certain state of mind, and that's by an adult, okay? So kal vachomer by a child. When a child is in a certain state of anger, it is not the time to teach a child emotions, you know? It's just not the time. I mean, there are other times. You should make a record of it, just try to understand, is there something that's just normal, a sibling rivalry, which is unavoidable, or is there something more serious that you, at another time, you want to take up with a child? That's something else. But at that moment, I don't think that's the time to do it. In general, yes.
When siblings are
I don't think a parent should intervene in there. When siblings are, as long as they're not harming themselves physically, I don't think parents should intervene. I think it's going to play it out. Yes. What? Well, it's not a matter of ignoring. It's not doing it to you. It's a matter of, that's just normal activity. It's normal activity. You're not a child. Everybody has aggression. Everybody has, I don't think, there's another idea that somebody mentioned, I think should be addressed also. In other words, there is no reason to encourage a child to have an outlet for their aggression. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like somebody said, oh, I'm going to let the child get their aggression out. It's not like aggression is bottled up in a box and you got to let it out. I mean, it doesn't work that way. In other words, you understand what I'm saying? It's not like an object, an entity that you have to work on to get it out. But a parent must realize that this is normal activity, normal exchange, aggressive exchanges. That's part of life, and that's part of human nature, and there's nothing that a person has to do anything about that. You know what I mean? Hopefully the person becomes older. These very emotions are the fuel for channeling, for higher acting human activity. I mean, they're not bad. They're not bad. Don't look at aggression as a bad thing. That's a Christian idea. Aggression is bad. No, it's not a bad thing. It's something which could be used, which will ultimately, hopefully, be used in a higher sphere of human activity. And there's nothing wrong with it. Don't get shocked when you see raw aggression. A child has raw aggression. There's no question about it. I mean, a child, really, contrary to what most people think, a child can be extremely cruel, capable of extreme cruelty. But that's because of the way they're constructed at the time. The tremendous tremendous instinctual development and psychological instinctual development, and the guilt side is not really that developed at that point. As a child could do things that are horrible. But you can't be taken aback or shocked by that, because you have to understand that that's at that level they don't have the conscience that you have as an adult. So minus out that conscience, you would do the same thing. But you can't look at it as you're shocked that your child can say something like that or think of doing things like that. It's not an adult; it's a child. Yes. Okay, I mentioned that last time. I think that in terms of socialization of a child, I do not think it's something. I disagree with people that maintain that it's something that is taught. That's my own theory. I do not believe that a child has to be taught to socialize. I think socializing is a normal effect, a result of a normal personality. I don't think that's to be taught. So I do not think, for instance, I do not think if a child were raised alone and the child were normal and then they were allowed to interact, let's say at the age of 11 or 12, I don't think that they find themselves at a disadvantage if they're normal. I do not believe it, because I think that it's not so, insofar as it's learned, it's because there are problems. In other words, if a child cannot relate adequately, doesn't feel comfortable with other human beings and relating to another human being comfortably, it means because they have certain problems. And that's why the internal problems are the cause. But I think it's just a natural, normal thing. And insofar as the child is a normal child, they will not have any problem relating to other children. You don't have to teach them that, not necessarily teach them that. Yes. Okay. The reason, I'll tell you the reason. That's a good question. The reason why it's detrimental for the child to see parents fighting is because of a very delicate and complex, relationship that children have towards the parents. And a child, a male child has certain feelings towards the mother, different feelings towards the father, and a female child has different feelings at different stages towards the parents. When there's a split, so then what happens is that it engenders certain types of thoughts and brings them into play, which causes them to have great guilt about. And it evokes, it drives them into, it allows them to go into a certain pattern, a certain area, which is beyond where they should be in expressing certain feelings that they have towards either the mother or the father. Okay? Like I said, everything has to be held. The balance, what the Rambam emphasizes about that equilibrium, is really a central idea in human life. And a male child has very certain strong feelings towards the mother and certain negative feelings towards the father. It's all normal. It's all absolutely normal. But if the balance is shaken, and then the child can start fantasizing about certain positive feelings, let's say in the case of the male, towards the mother, and certain wishes that would be beyond the situation of a normal relationship, is not good. It's not good. This can later cause them to have certain guilt feelings, and it could be very, very detrimental. It could be, I would put it this way, that a child, I would say this much, I mean, without going too much into psychology, I would just say this much, that when parents are fighting, it is disturbing and enjoyable to the child, okay? It is both disturbing and enjoyable to the child. The child is gaining certain satisfactions out of it. The enjoyable part of it is not good, because it's bringing a child into a realm of fantasy and thoughts that are going to cause a conflict in the child. Child's not ready for that. You're putting a child into a world where they're not. You're putting them into a situation where they're going to be into conflicts that they're not ready to handle. See, an adult is different, but a child isn't ready to handle those kind of things. Right. So a child, again, it's very important. That balance is extremely important. You don't want to throw a child into a situation where energies are going to be going into areas that they're not ready to handle, okay? But that much I would say, that when parents are battling with each other, it's very, as much as the overt expression of the child will be disturbance. But a disturbance can also be from an underlying enjoyment too, which they feel is not appropriate. So that's why there are certain aggressive, just to use one again, certain aggressive feelings that every child has towards the parent, which you cannot help, okay? And in a battle, they will enjoy the fact that that parent is suffering, you know, and because of the battle, and they'll start taking sides, and then they're going to start feeling uncomfortable about the fact that they take sides, and the enjoyments that they're getting out of the battle are momentary and are dangerous because they're not ready for that. They cannot handle that. It's a dangerous thing. Just to give an example, a daughter with a mother, as you know, I mean, there's a lot of conflicts. And just to use that side, okay, a lot of conflicts. So a daughter may enjoy seeing the father battling with the mother, and the child will gain a certain vicarious satisfaction out of the fact that the mother is suffering, you know, due to this fighting. That's not a good thing. That you don't want a child to get into something like that. So they're not ready for those kind of things, and you're throwing them into an arena that they cannot handle. And it's not right. It's not fair to the child. So, again, when parents are fighting, it presents a very, very, very dangerous kind of mental phenomena for many, many reasons. It's first of all, the simple thing is that the foundation is breaking, is cracking, and it's allowing individual emotions to take courses which they shouldn't be taking alone, you see. A child is a balance, you know, of different emotions. One balances off the other. You don't want to allow one emotion to just take off, you see, on its own and have certain experiences and certain gratifications, and then it's going to be in conflict with other emotions. The balance is lost. Very, very bad thing for parents to battle in front of a child. Okay? Yeah.
What age are you referring
to? I would say until a child is about 14, that it's bad. Okay? Then it's bad for a different reason. You know, I mean, just, you know. But it's never good. I mean, it's never good. I mean, even parents that get divorced when children are, you know, are almost adults, it's bad. But I would say in terms of real harm, I would say through puberty. Mm-hmm. I'd say through about 13, 14. Up to that point, I think it's very bad. The younger, of course, in my opinion, the younger, the worse. For a very young child, it's even worse. Yes? I say physically, I mean, you know, most of the time, you can't help it. It's just, you know, life isn't fair. There's an older child and a younger child, and the older child has an advantage. But most of the time, you'll see that it's not as bad as you think. I mean, you know, the older child, you figure, has an advantage, says mean things. The younger child develops their own defenses, too. They can, you know, it's not, don't get, the less involved you are, usually, the less involved, the better. But again, this provided there's no real harm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. You always feel the underdog. You have to help the underdog. Most of the time, unless it's a rare situation, the underdog does all right. They've got their own methods of taking care of things. Yeah. Achievement in school. There's an area where now I differ with most people. I don't think that should be a priority. I really don't think that achievement in school should be a thing that is between the parent and the child. In other words, the child has to achieve in school for the parent. I think you send your child to school, and the achievement should be basically based upon the child's own natural feelings to achieve. It should not be something that the child is doing for the parent or the child should feel. I think if you raise a child properly, they'll do well in school. And I think that it should not be a demand on the child. So I really disagree. I know that most people have a different opinion, but in my opinion, school should not be something that the child feels they have to do for the parent. And the child should not feel that the love of the parent is contingent upon how well they do in school. I really don't think that that's important. And I don't really think how well a child does in school is that important to begin with, in my opinion. Okay? It's not really that important. It's not the whole idea of our, you know, educational system is not based on the biggest chachamim. And, you know, the plan that they set forth and the ideas they have are not really that, you know, that solidly grounded in correct philosophy and psychology. So I really think the whole thing is an error, is a mistake in terms of viewing it. This is the barometer, or this is the school, the grade in the school is really a barometer of what the child's self-worth is. I think that whole idea, that whole notion, I think is a very harmful one. Very harmful one. Okay? Yes. No, I think that if a child feels comfortable with the parents, and they see the parents are not looking at school as an instrument of evaluation, I think a child will do well in school. May not get A's, you know, and it could be if you push them, they would get A's. But I think you'd be making a big mistake. I think they got B's or C's, it's just as good. Another school, it doesn't make a difference what their grades are. Okay? If a child is failing in school miserably, then I think it's an indication of some kind of a disturbance. But I don't think it's because this way. I think then that's an indication that there's something wrong in the whole relationship between the parents and the child. But I really think it is a very big mistake to raise a child in a way that they feel that Their self-worth is contingent on whether they got an A, a B, or a C, or a D. It doesn't make any difference. I don't think it makes any difference anyway. I really don't think it makes any difference. I don't think it's any indication of what the child's going to be. Absolutely zero. Yes?
So that might be from the standpoint of the brain and the child's progress psychologically, but then from the standpoint of the way the society works, they look at these things and they become passionate for it.
That's true. So that's why you have to raise a child. And see, the child doesn't worry about society as much as the parent does. Because for the child, society is the parents. That's the society. So if the child feels secure in terms of their parents, I don't think they're going to worry about society. That's a late, you know, when you get older in life, you realize that you have to deal with society. But in the child's world, you're the child's society. The child feels that they have your love and they feel secure in the way you feel about the child. I don't think you worry about society. That's not a child's, you know. That's not a child's world. Yes?
Is there anything wrong in trying to put forth
I don't think you should do that. I don't think you should. No, I don't think that there are certain things which I think are very, certain ideas in society which are very harmful. Like one of them is, you can do anything, you know? No, every child can't do anything, because obviously we're living in a world where there are people that have superior qualities and people that don't have these qualities. So to tell a child that every child that there's nothing that you can't do is a terrible thing, because it may, I know you're not saying, I'll get to your thing, because what you're doing, I know it's not your thing. I'm just saying anyways, that the fact is what you're doing is you're making the child feel guilty that they aren't something outstanding, because they really could be that. And they really can't. So it's completely unfair, and you're really taking away from the child the opportunity to be happy with what they are. Every child is not a genius. Every child is a human being, and they don't have to be a genius. A person, all the Torah says about a person should use all their energies, direct whatever energies and abilities that God gave them to the Derech HaTorah, and that is what a person should do. Okay? So that's what things are. In terms of your question was to teach a child to put their best effort into anything. Again, I think that a child, I do not think that you teach a child responsibility. I don't believe in that. I don't believe you could teach a person responsibility. I think responsibility has to be something which a person who is raised properly and normally knows that they have to, in order to do something, they have to put out a certain effort. That's something which I don't think you have to be a genius to figure that out. Okay? So when you say teaching responsibility, there's no such thing as teaching, because teaching means to teach you a new idea. Is that a new idea if you tell a child, you know, if you want to get on the bus at 8 o'clock, you're going to have to be up at 7 o'clock. Is that a brilliant idea? Wow, I never realized that. See, it's not, you're not teaching the person anything. The person knows this themselves. What you're doing is applying pressure. That's what you're really doing. Okay? You're not teaching them, it's not teaching responsibility, it's applying pressure towards responsibility. I really think that responsibility should be something that a person does naturally, because they want to accomplish something, so they know they have to do. You want Y, you have to do X. They'll do it. Okay? I'm not saying that there is never a time that a child may need a push in that direction. It's possible. You know, everybody needs Musa, Divrei Musa. So we all need Divrei Musa. Sometimes a child, you have to sit down and explain to them, look, you're doing this and that, and you're really neglecting this, I know it's hard for you, you got to put in the energy over here because you're going to lose out. That's a certain, you know, your own sechel will tell you that you have to do that. But I don't think, I think to create responsible people, let me put it this way, I'll tell you what I do. You don't create responsible people by pressing responsibility. That's not the way you create responsible people. The way you produce responsible people is by educating them properly, by having their emotions develop properly, and by having a healthy psyche, and then the person will naturally be responsible. And if they want to be whatever it may be, they want to be an unusual... a person in this in a profession, whatever they may choose to be, that that's their goal in life, then they'll do it. And if they don't care to do that, then they won't do that. That's it. Both. It's not that people think that a great or unusual person is more responsible. It's not true. They're not more responsible. They're different goal-oriented. Not more. So Moshe Feinstein didn't force himself to learn more than another guy in the Beis Medrash. He loved to learn, and he learned. So in that sense, he was less responsible. So, so the idea of responsibility... The idea of responsibility is, again, it's a simplistic idea from this society, which really does not hold any water. It works just the opposite. All right? There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. I mean, a child has energies wasting their energies, so then you say, okay, I'll tell you what, if you learn for now, we'll go and we'll do this. We'll go play ball. Nothing wrong with that. It's very good. So in the meantime, you get their energies involved in Torah. To be involved in Torah requires mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma. Even with us, it's shelo lishma. Okay? I mean, look, how many times, I had things in my mind I wouldn't have given a shiur, right? I had to give a shiur, so that's it. I dropped everything. I gave a shiur. I felt unbelievable. So, mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma works by everyone. And by a child, it's the same thing. There's nothing wrong with that. A child is wasting their energies. I don't mean they're doing anything bad, but their energy is to be put to better use. Okay? Nothing wrong. We're saying, okay, come on, we'll sit down and we'll learn a little bit, and then we'll go out and we'll do this and that, and you know the child excited about doing that. So, fine, it's wonderful. What's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that. Very good. Fine, that's what the Rambam's talking about. Good thing to do. Yes? So, as a matter of fact, before I'm trying to interrupt you, but as a matter of fact, it is a very good thing, because in the child's mind, it associates the learning with an enjoyment, which is also good. Okay? That's why, by the way, it's very bad to rob a child of enjoyment, because ultimately learning is associated with enjoyment. And if there's a child who never enjoyed anything, so how could you? You have no basis to associate it to. You understand what I'm saying? So a child enjoying themselves is a very good thing. Yeah. Okay, the only reason a child should keep their room clean is because of their parents. But it's not something for a child when you think about it. I mean, truth of the matter is that it's not a real advantage, like the Ram would say, you know, that. That dressing is a social perfection. It's not a real perfection. I mean, there were many, many geniuses with the most unkempt rooms. So there is no real value there. But I certainly would not make a major issue out of it. You understand what I'm saying? Because it's not a real value. There really is no benefit in it. Okay? Even though, I mean, the old Bali must say that... They tell a story. They said that a great Talmud Chacham went to visit his son in yeshiva. So he went to yeshiva, didn't see the son, went to his room, went home. He says, "How'd you go home? You didn't even see him. Want to see how he's learning?" He said, "No, nope, I saw his room was masudar. I knew he was learning well." It's a nice story, but it's not necessarily true. So the thing is, on the other hand, I mean, I've seen people who are really gunning it and had the most sloppy rooms. Okay, and we know that's true. So it's not really a value. The only thing is that a child, again, who's raised properly, will naturally try to please the parent. And there's nothing wrong with that. In other words, if the parent wants the room neat, the child, it's not a value to the child. I'm speaking about a child about 7, 8, 9 years old, where they have some understanding. So there's nothing wrong with the child thinking, look, I really don't care about this. My mother wants it neat. I'll do it for her. So a normal child will do that. You know, I'm not saying they will do it in the same level that the mother expects, but they will do that, and that's really what, but to teach a child, to make a child feel guilty that they are sloppy, I think that's wrong. Now they say, look at this sloppy room. This is a horrible thing. The child has no understanding. Well, you explain to them why this is bad, and there's nothing new. What's wrong? I know where everything is, you know? So to make it into a value, but if you tell the child, say, look, it bothers mommy that the room is like this. You know what I mean? If she likes it neat, she please try to get neat, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Fine. You don't make the child feel guilty. Make the child realize that this is the mother's likes it this way. She's entitled to like things the way she wants to, and that's it. So an appreciation for what the mother does for the child, the child should go out of their way to put in some effort to keep it neat. That would be the proper way to handle that situation. Yes. No, I don't think it's there. Whose it belongs to depends on the parent. The parent has to determine that. If the parent wants to say, look, this is your area, do whatever you want, parent can do that. I mean, that's up to the parent. The child doesn't own it. I mean, but... No, but... What, to say the child, do whatever you want? Fine, nothing wrong with that. If that doesn't bother you, fine. Nothing wrong with that. What's going to happen is the child probably grew up to be a very neat child. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. In other words, I don't know if I'm answering the question, but the fact is, I think that it should be worked out in a way where it's fair to the child, you understand, and where the parent is happy. And I think that both things could be accomplished. You don't have to let the child play a game in the living room or the dining room. It doesn't say that anywhere. You can say the child can play only in their room. There's nothing wrong with that. A child that's raised in a family where they only play in their rooms, as opposed to children who play in dining rooms, I don't think you're going to find any difference in your psychological life. Doesn't make any difference. It simply depends upon what the parent determines. You have the right to determine the rules of your house. And it's not going to make any difference. So do what you want. Okay. That's true. You're teaching the child. The questions are by offering a child some kind of a compensation. You know, so which is good, which the Rambam recommends, and it's wrong for another reason. And the answer is yes. But the fact is that you cannot teach a child ideas that are beyond the level of the child's capacity, capabilities. And the way that the child will unlearn that is because the child is going to do it because it thinks it's going to get another enjoyment. Okay? Which is good, because it's you're telling the child that you're orienting the child towards an enjoyable goal. But the child, when they get older and they can enjoy thought, they're going to see this enjoyment is much greater than that. So that's what's going to win them over, is the enjoyment of Torah. You understand? In other words, when we say that learning, that you learn Torah because of enjoyment, we don't say we're making up an enjoyment. It's there. So when the child experiences it's only normal when a person experiences a greater pleasure that the smaller pleasure pales, okay? So therefore you don't have to worry about that. Fine, let them do it now because of the ice cream cone or whatever they're going to enjoy, okay? Yeah, but later they're going to see that this is much more enjoyable, so what do you have to worry about? Nothing wrong with that. A person would be a fool to go for a lesser enjoyment as opposed to a greater enjoyment. So the only thing you don't want to do is prevent the child from having that greater enjoyment. And that you're going to do if you force them, or if you make it painful. If you associate learning with pain, then you could be sure that you're doing a wonderful job at preventing the child from enjoying learning in the future. In the future, that is what you don't want to do. But a positive thing, why not? The child just doing it for that purpose. You're not establishing, see, you don't have to worry about establishing habits. You know, habits are not just intrinsic things. Habits are based on everyday, you know, dynamics of psychological energies. It's not just a habit, and it's a simple thing. They're not going to get a habit of doing something. Oh, now they're not going to do it for the real enjoyment. That's not true. When they get the real enjoyment, they're going to see this is really This is far greater than anything I had before. But they can't have that as a child. It's not possible. Very, very rare. I do say whatever enjoyment a child has should be nurtured. There's no question about it. And whenever a child's interested in something, you should always respond in a way that you encourage that enjoyment. But that's not the same kind of enjoyment that an adult mind has in contemplating ideas. They're not capable of that adult level. So therefore, the intellectual curiosity that they have should be, of course, nurtured, but at the same time, you have to realize that if you're just going to rely on that, they're not really going to, you know, unless it's an unusual child, they're not going to really be involved in much learning, which is important for them to do at an early age as well. You know, so therefore, I say that there's nothing wrong with the, you know, with giving them a an enjoyable go. Nothing wrong with it. Yes. It's never harmful because you're not associating the learning with pain. You what you're doing is you're saying to do this for a greater pleasure. Nothing wrong. So it's neutral. Fine. Nothing wrong with it. There's never anything wrong with it. I told you, there's never anything wrong with it. Believe me. There's never anything wrong with sitting down learning. I don't care what the reason is. I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about adults. Okay? So you can do it with yourself. Well, I mean, I don't have an opinion on home schooling. I have an opinion on good schooling. Okay? In other words, it doesn't have to be at home. It doesn't have to be in school. I don't care where it is. The point is that, and my personal opinion is that, again, that the most important thing you can do for a child is to... Most important thing you can do for a child, and all the learning the child gets, is not because of the facts the child accumulates so much. Because what a child accumulates in the first few years, they can readily pick up in a very short time what took years. It could take them 5 or 6 months at a later period. You know, in other words, what a child learns at 6, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and at 12, they can learn in a few months. All right? But the important thing of learning when a child is in the early years is that the child should identify a good experience, a positive experience towards learning. That's the important thing. And even in the child's world, as I said before, they don't have enough of a capacity for enjoyment of learning. They're just going to sit and learn all the time. Most children, maybe a rare child, the only guy was different, others are different, but on the whole... But the fact is, the lo lishma, when they may sit and learn because they're looking forward to doing something enjoyable after the learning. But the fact is, in the process of learning, they're going to have enjoyable moments. They are, and those enjoyable moments are very important. And again, it's extremely important to be honest with the child and not to distort their mind, because the categories in their mind are delicate and are correct. And the reason why I'm in favor of homeschooling is because I feel that, again, I feel good schooling is important, and it's unfortunate, but I feel that most of the time the teachers that are in the, that one goes, if you put a child through 8 grades of early education, they may have 1 or 2 good teachers on the whole. And most of the teachers you're going to find are not really good teachers. And by not being good teachers, it means they're not honest, and they tell. And in order to avoid embarrassment, they'll say to the child, tell the child things that are not true, or things. Sometimes the child has a good question, but for some crazy reason, they feel that that's not a proper question, and therefore you shouldn't ask questions like this. And what they're doing then is very harmful, because they could be embarrassing a child because of the social pressure and the situation, embarrassing a child out of their mind, in other words, out of their mental interests. And many times they can close up their natural intellectual development. And I think that that's why, and that's the reason why I'm concerned. But given a situation where you have a school where you really have good teachers, I don't see any advantage to homeschooling, but I really feel, again, I really feel that in the early years are the most important years in terms of the child's intellectual development and the ability to not be in a situation where their minds are closed down. I mean, the child is very delicate, and a teacher is a powerful authority. And if that authority does not wield their authority properly, they really can close down the child's mind, and the child will be turned off because of emotional fears, or they think that they're not doing something proper, and it can really close off the channels of investigation. I think it's a big danger. My opinion is a big danger. So I'm talking about, I would say, till high school. I'd say in high school, I wouldn't be so concerned. Because if a child has a solid foundation in the early years and they have confidence in their thinking and their mind, even if a teacher will do something that will intimidate them, they're not going to be internally intimidated. They may suffer an abuse, but they're not going. But a child can be internally intimidated out of thinking, and because of a teacher that is not on the proper level. And unfortunately, out there are many teachers like that. So that's why that's my point of homeschooling. Yes. Again, that's why I think it's very important when a child goes to school to really be very vigilant. That's why I said before that you can't give up your responsibility, and you have to really be involved and see what's happening. And if the teacher is really inappropriately intimidating the child, then you have to. The child looks up to you as the ultimate, decider, and therefore you have to set the child straight. The child has confidence in you, mainly, more than the teacher. But if you can let it go, the teacher's going to take your place. That's what I said before. You can't relinquish your responsibility. If you abdicate, the teacher's going to take your place, and the child's mind can be ruined. Can be ruined. So, I think so. Yes, my opinion. Yes, I think so. Yes.
Is the man here a happy or even a man?
What?
Again, I have a very unpopular opinion on that. That I really think it's bad to have children raised by Ovdeh Lodazara, by Goyim, and by maids. I think it's a terrible, terrible thing, and I think that people pay for that. And I think, again, I mean, I think I mentioned once before that Moshe Rabbeinu had the ultimate, it says, Vatera Sakitovu, which means that he was in every way the ultimate physically, the way he looked and the way he was, and they saw he was unusual, and he had the best upbringing possible, and the upbringing was by his mother. And that was Miriam's interceding, Tikras Em Hayoled, and I think that it's a terrible thing to have I don't care how wealthy a person is, I think they're really doing a disservice to the child. I know it's very unpopular, but in my opinion, I think it's a serious matter. There is no substitute for the mother. No substitute for the mother. Just for many, many reasons. And if a mother has a child raised by a substitute, I mean a maid or, a servant, I think that they're making a big mistake. I can't say, that I'm going to predict disaster, but I say you're really taking big chances, and I think there's a definite loss. There's no question. There's a big loss. In that respect, I would say what somebody said a long time ago, that the advantages of the wealthy in all areas have never really shown to be of any significance. Not in health, and not in child rearing, or not in any area whatsoever. On the whole, it's been shown that poor people were much better in terms of health than wealthy people. And in the same way, I would say, in terms of raising children, that the more money a person has, unfortunately, gives them more options where they may be able to have have more free time for themselves, but I really wonder what they're accomplishing in their free time as opposed to the investment they could be making in their children, which would really be a genuine accomplishment and is a real responsibility of an Ein B'Yisrael. Yes?
When are you going to be considered safe for a mother to be away from the crowd? Like, what's the right thing for a period of time?
No. I think it's safe at any age. I think it's safe at any age. I think it depends on the situation. I mean, if you have, for instance, you have a child that's comfortable with grandparents, parents can go away. Can go away. I think it depends on the situation. In other words, but I think to take a child and leave a child with an utter stranger is crazy. Again, at almost any age. I mean, until the child's an adult. I mean, until the child maybe you know a teenager, they're on their own. But I don't think there's any age where the parent cannot leave the child. I think it depends on the situation. If they're friendly with uncles and aunts and they get along and they're fine, nothing wrong with it. Yes. I can tell you again, I have a very unpopular opinion on that, but I really think that I think babysitters and entrusting a child to somebody else is a very bad idea. I always say, would you leave $1 million with that person for 5 hours? I don't think so. I mean, at the expense of your sanity? Well, if that's the case, where the person is in a situation that it's their sanity is at stake, so then I would say that it's better for the child that they should go away for 5 hours, because having an insane parent would be worse than having a parent missing for 5 hours, because this way the parent's missing permanently. So I would have to judge it based on that. In my opinion, homework presents a very big problem for the parent. I think the truth of the matter is there is no reason for homework. I think that is a...
What?
There is no reason.
It's on the ground.
Well, it's a big. That's a problem of schooling. I think that's a schooling problem. You cannot tell me that a child should sit in school for 8 hours a day and has to come home and do work. I mean, what are you teaching for 8 hours? It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's just ridiculous. Does the parent go to work for 8 hours and come home and sit and learn for 5 hours? I'd like to see it. It'd be very nice, but it would be a tremendous accomplishment if they did. Well, why does the child have to? It does not make any sense. So now you're living in a situation which is improper, where the child really should be able to enjoy themselves as a child a little bit. They come on 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and when they shouldn't be able to go out and play. I mean, well, it's just not that they have to sit and do homework for 3 hours. It doesn't make any sense. The whole thing is crazy. But given the crazy situation, what's the best way to deal with it? So one way to deal with it is do the homework yourself. But I think probably the only thing you can do, practically, is to try to help the child through the homework as quickly as possible so they can have a little time to spend as a child. Okay? You want to prepare a child for society, but you don't want to hand over a child to society. So, you have to weigh that. You understand me? In other words, you don't want to prepare a child to be like society is. Right? So that's why you don't want to prepare the child to do crazy things that society does. Okay? You don't want to prepare a child to conform to society. That you don't want to do. Okay? You want to prepare a child to be able to live with society and be able to live a life that they understand is intelligent and is proper and is productive. Not at all like society is. Okay? So you want to teach a child how to handle society. All right? So that's why you don't want to teach a child to, you tell a child, well, you must do homework because society does homework, and this is just a simple thing. You have to conform to, that's conforming to society. All right? You want to teach a child how to handle society. So that's why I say the best thing is to help the child through the homework and explain to the child that this is completely ridiculous, but because that would be the proper thing. That this is completely ridiculous, but because of the fact that you're in this situation and we have no choice, so you have to do this as a practical matter. So I'm going to help you do it, and we're going to go through it quickly, and then you can go and do what you want. Okay? That is very good, because then you're teaching the child that you must really satisfy what society demands in a way that you can't live outside of society, but at the same time, you mustn't bend your mind to the values of society. So that would be a good chinuch. Okay? Yeah. By the way, there's something I want to tell you. It mentioned about teaching enjoyment and learning. You cannot teach a child to enjoy learning. There's no way you can do that. Either a child has the capacity or a child doesn't have the capacity. And I would say if a child doesn't have the capacity, you shouldn't be kind, that's no reason to be alarmed. No, this child doesn't enjoy learning. I don't think you should really be concerned. You should even put your eye on that. You understand? That should not be your concern. That's just an either the child has it or they don't. And you can't do anything about it. And if they don't have it, they don't have it. There's nothing you can do about it. Okay? You have to be ready. A person has to be realistic with regard to their children. They can't expect, you know, you can't expect the child's going to be a vulnerable. You can't expect the child's going to really have a tremendous capacity to enjoy learning. What if the child doesn't? So what? Does that mean you throw the child away? No. That's equally wrong. I mean, you have a responsibility. The child is another human being. V'ahavta l'recha kamocha certainly applies to your child. So whether your child has the ability to be a doyen or to enjoy learning, or whether they have a little ability to enjoy learning, that's the way the person is. You have to accept the child for what they are. Doesn't mean they're bad. Every person is not a Talmud Chacham. What does Chazal say? You give a person 5 years. To be a Talmud Chacham is an unusual thing. So if in those 5 years they succeed, fine. And if not, they'll never see a Siman Bracha. What does it mean? It means that they won't be a Talmud Chacham. So they'll be a regular person that goes to shul and he has an idea. Everybody has some enjoyment, but that I think is a bad thing for a person. Again, then the person's just acting out their own problems, you see, and it's the child's life, and you have to have your life, okay. So that I think is an important thing, because I keep on hearing things that indicate that, you know, we're going to get a method now for the child to enjoy learning. You're going in that direction. You're going in a very bad direction. Okay? When you're disciplining a child, should you show emotion? I would say, on the whole, no. Because by showing emotion, you're abdicating your role. Because your role is the parent. If you're showing emotion, then you're coming out to child's level. You should be bigger than that. Okay? You should be doing things for the benefit of the child. And that should be just like what did Aristotle say? A parent is like is supposed to be like a general. A general is troops. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't show emotion. He knows what he's doing, and he has exactly what to do. If you show emotion, there's something wrong. That means you're getting thrown in your position, and you shouldn't be thrown in your position. You should have confidence, and you know what to do. Okay. In an extreme case, I'm not saying a child, I'm talking, as I said, everything I'm saying is in general. It could be an extreme case where a child really does something that is crazy and the child has to be corrected. Then it would be appropriate to do something, convey emotion. But I'm speaking in general. In general, absolutely not. I mean, and that situation does not necessarily have to occur. But I can't address individual situations. I can only address general upbringing. In general, no. You should not be showing emotion. You should be showing... Let me put it this way. You shouldn't walk around like a robot. I don't mean... When I say you don't show emotion, I mean your emotion should be a proper emotion as a mother. Okay? There is an emotion of a mother. That is an emotion. Okay? It's not the same kind of... It's not an emotion shouting at the kid. Eh? That's not that emotion. But it's an emotion. It's a certain... You don't walk around like a... This is your... There's an emotional attitude towards everything a person does. There's a certain kind of... There's an emotion of a mother. Emotion of a mother is that they act a certain way towards a child, and and the child senses this. The child has confidence in that. The child feels confidence when they see the mother is confident. Okay, if the mother stops screaming and shouting, it's a breach in that confidence. It shows that they're losing their position. So that's not a good thing. And that's what I do. I say, the child's going to poke another child's eye with their finger. I say, grab the child, put him in the room, and say, until you change, you cannot do it. But not out of the child's sense that this is the way they should act. And it's not the mother is getting angry at the child on a personal level, but the mother is acting properly in the role that is given to them as a parent in guiding the behavior of the child. That should be firm, and that should be understood, and that should be the emotion, okay, that the child perceives. You do not share your emotions, your adult emotions, with the child. That's a big mistake. Because, again, that's not the child's world. The child does not know what an adult emotion is. You don't expose them to your feelings. Your feelings keep to yourself. I know you can't always do that. It's going to be, a spillage, but the fact is, you can't, so what? No one's perfect. I want to emphasize also, The fact is that whatever we're discussing is ideal situations. But you have to recognize that we all have a tremendous level of tolerance. So when you make mistakes, it's not the end of the world. Because, you know, we learn to absorb things. You want to minimize as much as possible, but on the other hand, you don't have to be crazy and think that, you know, because you made a few mistakes that you ruined your life. That's also not true. That's also not true. Everybody makes mistakes, and it's not going to, as long as you're on course, basically on course, and when you get off course, get yourself back on course, you'll be fine. Yeah. You don't have to, if a child kicks someone in a supermarket, I mean, you have to wait for the child to understand why it's not proper to do that. You just have to stop the behavior. And the child has to recognize that you are implementing a prevention of this behavior. That's fine. That's it. You understand what I'm saying? No, the child has to recognize, in a sense, that they are a child and that the parent determines what their activity should be, whether they understand it or not. That's something that they have to understand, okay? All right, we suppose that's a muna, okay? Yeah. Young child asks about Ashgacha. There I would say that I would violate my principle I mentioned before, although I'll explain to you why. I would say that God has, everything is Ashgacha Pratis. Everything is Ashgacha Pratis. I would not say there's Ashgacha Kolius, and sometimes you're under Ashgacha Pratis. Now, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I say that. Because the truth of the matter is that even when we say Ashgacha Kolius, we do not mean that God does not have knowledge of our particular state under Ashgacha Kolius. You understand? In other words, if God puts a person in Ashgacha Kolius, he knows that he is in Ashgacha Kolius. He knows every detail. So there's God's omniscience, you see, which means that God knows every single particular. So he's not away from God. So a lot of people think, oh, they think Ashgacha Kolius means God is not there. It's not true, because God, in terms of his omniscience, is there in every detail. But he's not, there is no specific direction, mandate from God for a certain thing. It's just under God's general rules, principles, okay? For a child will not understand that. And so if you're going to say to a child as Ashgacha Kolius, he's going to think that God is not involved in that realm in any way, which would be a denial of his omniscience. So I think that on a child's level, it's important to say that every single thing is Ashgacha Kolius, in order that he has the idea that God, that there's no, I mean Ashgacha Pratis, I'm sorry, but in order that he has the idea that God's omniscience is in every single area. Okay? So then later you could explain that what it means is, yeah, God is involved in every area, but not in the way you think. You understand? So it's better to go that way. If you go the other way, it's just going to think there's an area where God is not involved in. There's no God there. That would be a more wrong idea. You follow? This one is correctable. The other one, I think, is less correctable. I think she must talk about young when his child first starts asking questions. Yeah, early. Right. Maybe at 10, 11, 12, you know, they might be able to understand the difference. But, you know, when they get into science and they see that there are certain rules in the universe, principles, then I think they would be able to understand the, you know, what that question is. But at an early age, everything has to be Ashgacha Pratis. Okay? Yeah. I wouldn't call a child a Machalos Gavis. But I would say that Chazal said already that it depends on the understanding of the child. So, I mean, in other words, you have to, again, I say that a parent, I trust the parent's intuition. If they're not being, you understand, misdirected, if they're not being, if their intuition is not being distracted by other considerations, I think a parent would think about it and say, well, look, is it really important for the child at this point? Is it going to make any difference if they touch that muksa or they don't touch that muksa? Is that going to make a difference 5 years from now? You have to just think about it. You know what I mean? If it doesn't make any difference, do they really know what they're doing? Can they control this desire they have to put the light on or not? Is it going to mean anything to them later if they put the light on at this age? You know, or are they too involved in their own thing and it's just going to become a big thing, a big negative, being very painful to them. That's all they're going to remember. And if they had put the light on, they wouldn't think about it, and it doesn't make any difference. And that's why I would say that if you really make a careful assessment, you'll find out that in the early years, even 5, 6, 7, depending on the child, you know, child can't control themselves. They does not pay to make an issue out of it. Okay, it's better to say at your age it's okay. All right. Well, actually, for a child to do malacha for an adult, as Rabbi Kivega says, that if it's a derabbanan, and if they benefit from it, they're allowed to do it. Okay. Like I said, you want to avoid traumas, but at the same time, to say that just because a child had a trauma, they're scarred for life is not that simple either. The person is very complex, and it's, you know, a person can tolerate a lot. So you can't say for sure. Certainly it's not advisable. But again, that's the problem with schooling, that you have people that are in very important positions, because, you know, your children who are very young are in their hands, and they're not really adequately prepared, you know, intellectually for their task. And that's the problem of the early years in school. It's a problem. In terms of the child's sexual libido, what you try to do is to minimize in a non-repressive way the activity. That's the best advice I can give you, okay? Well, you don't want to make them feel guilty about what they're doing, so therefore to stop them would not be a good idea. But on the other hand, you don't want to create situations where they can't indulge in it. That's also bad. Okay? So that's why you have to be very wise with regard to that. And do not allow the children to be in situations where they're going to become involved in that kind of activity. Because again, the problem over there is that they're involving themselves in activities that they are not ready for. That at that point, the instinct is not really completely together. So it has various channels, and to have one channel develop, you understand, is not good. So you want to keep them away from the situation as much as possible. On the other hand, you cannot be repressive, because that's very, very harmful as well. So it requires, you know, a certain amount of chachma and how you bring that about. But I think a smart parent knows what to do, and knows that there are certain situations which are not good for children to be in, because of the fact that they will indulge in certain activities which are not good for them to have their energies channeled in that direction. Okay, but repressive is not good either. It's the right thing to repress on that would be. I would call the child out and say, you know, this is some. How old is the child?
5, 6.
Good question. Well, the thing is like this: that if you could ignore it, and the other children are not don't take notice of it, fine. But otherwise, you'd have to do something where you would not be acting, you have to speak to the child in a way that you wouldn't be repressive or telling them to do a terrible thing, but that they would stop it. I mean, I have to think of what exactly I would say. Okay, something like that, right. That's true. No, that's good. All right. Something like that, right. Right. Well, you could ask the child, is there something bothering you, you know, there or something, you know, you know, in a way that you're not accusing them of doing the horrible thing, and you're going to put a stop to the behavior. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you have to use this all the time. Yeah. Oh, okay.
You can take it out.
the idea of brachas? Factors. That the child should be taught the brachas, the child should be aware, of course, that the parents make the brachas, and the child should be aware that the parents are happy that they make brachas. That's a certain sense the child will know, and that's good. And if you have those three things in combination, I think that they will, that they'll be, you know, people where they'll be, grow up into people that make brachas. It's okay. Right. That's exactly right. Exactly right. You should do it. In other words, you should train the child to make brachas. You should train the child to make brachas in a way that they don't feel if they don't make a bracha, it's the worst affair in the world. Okay? If they miss it, it's the worst thing in the world. But in a way that they know the brachas, they know you make the brachas, and they know that you are pleased that they make brachas. But again, if they skip a bracha, it's not like the worst affair in the world. That's not good either. So, again, you need that balance. Yeah. Who else?
I want to know what you thought about giving something for to do and not something to do.
What age?
What age?
Any age, right? Wouldn't that? 3 years old. You know? Get those kids working there. Okay, I'm off now? Oh, it's on. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll leave it. But anyways, now I think like this, and there's nothing wrong with children having chores. Nothing wrong with that. That's fine. There are certain things that you have a right to demand that they do certain things. Absolutely, 100%, nothing wrong with it. I mean, you're not going to work them to the bone, but 5 hours a day is enough. You know?
What's the approach?
What? The approach to take is that you have to, it depends on the age. I assume you're speaking about an older child, okay? Like an 8 or 9 year old, say, look, this is, you have to do this, and this is what we're asking you to do in the house, and this is your responsibility, and if you're not going to execute your responsibility, then you have to realize that, you know, that we're not going to, there's going to be certain consequences, you know, and you don't let the child watch television, or, you know, you have to start restricting the child in a certain way. I mean, there's, you know, that you have a right to do that. You have a right to impose rules. There's nothing wrong with a parent imposing rules. Okay, I'm not saying you have to do that, but I'm saying if you choose that method of raising your child, you're not going to harm them in any way. Okay? I'm not saying you have to do that either. I don't think you have to give the children anything to do, in my opinion, like a chore. I don't think you have to do that. I don't think you're going to make a better child by giving them a chore. And I don't think it'll make them worse. If that's your way of doing things, fine. It's not going to really harm them. Okay? Will it benefit them? I really don't think so. But it'll benefit you? Fine. You have a right. Yeah. If it benefits you, and there's a real reason to do it, absolutely you have a right to do it, 100%. And if that's the situation at home where these things are necessary, then on the contrary. Then I think if you didn't do it, you'd be doing an injustice. Because the child could probably sense that this is a situation at home, that something has to be done, and they have to pitch in and they have to help. And if you're just going to tell them that they don't have to help, then I think you're doing the child an injustice. But insofar as if it's not necessary, I don't see any benefit. I don't think that by giving a child chores, you're producing a more responsible individual. I just don't think so. But again, if it's something which is needed, then the child probably knows it's needed. And if they don't do it, then it's wrong because then you're bending reality in order to cater to the child, which would be like spoiling the child. That would be equally wrong. The guidelines for parents showing affection towards a child, I think whatever the parents should be even. Whatever the parent's nature is, you know, that's the way the parent should be. I think a normal parent should have affection, should naturally feel affection towards the child. I mean, and they should express it. I think like a lot of these things, you know, it's like saying, how should a person enjoy a steak? I mean, you know, it's a very hard question to answer. If you don't enjoy it, I don't know what to tell you. Then don't eat it. I mean, if you, I mean... What? There's nothing wrong with a parent hugging a child. What's wrong? I mean, I don't see any reason to restrict that. Yes. Now, if your question is, does physical affection enhance, if for instance, in terms of the Oedipal complex, in other words, does normal physical interactions is fine. I would say, yeah, insofar as exposure to other things like music and whatever, I mean, basically you have to understand that our society is a cultureless society. In other words, we don't open culture. Culture is a culture, don't even have culture. We only have Torah. So the thing is that music, we don't really look at music as a great thing, and somebody's a great musician. And a great musician means that they basically wasted their life, as far as we're concerned. I mean, it's not chachma. But the thing is that we also recognize that there is a part of a person that appreciates that. So if a child enjoys music, I think you'll be able to tell. And if they are inclined, they want to be involved in playing an instrument, fine. It's a very good thing. But it should be understood in its framework. It's like a recreation. There's no intrinsic value in it. Okay, there's no intrinsic value in music. We don't say that Mahler, I mean, spent his time in music. It was a great thing rather than sitting and learning. It was a waste of time, basically. Okay, made beautiful music, very nice. So that's nice. You want to enjoy yourself, want to relax and listen to the music. It's very nice, but you have to understand what it is. It's not a value. The difference between us and society is that in society, culture, what is culture? Culture is any activity of a human being which is beyond the activities that are necessary for his survival. And then you go into an area of culture, okay? But culture is basically nonsense. It's really nonsensical activities, and the only real activity is chachma. So in the Greek society, the Chachamim, I mean, the people spent their energies in math and in logics and philosophy. I mean, that was very good. But insofar as they spent it in other areas of beauty of the body and in architecture and these other areas, that has no intrinsic value. Music has no intrinsic value. If a child is predisposed, musically inclined, and enjoys playing an instrument, I think that's a good thing. They relax that way, so you should give them the ability to learn how to do that if that's what they want to do, just like you'd allow a child to be involved in sports. Okay? But it is a more sublimated activity in that sense, but it's not really a value. We don't value that. So fine, let the child do it as far as they like to and they enjoy it. But we don't hold, when a child is 7 years old, must have a piano teacher. I mean, we just don't value that. If he wants to learn, Mishnayos, he's much better off. Okay? Absolutely. And music therapy is very good. If music, I would say, without the institution of the psychological approach to music therapy, if a person sits back and relaxes and enjoys music, that's music therapy. For other people? It's all system, I know, it's all system. Right. It's good, very good. There's nothing wrong with enjoying life. Okay, that's what we say for Chaye Shah. Chazal say, Chaye Shah, they enjoyed Chaye Shah, but they knew it's Chaye Shah. That's a place. So it's not nothing. Is it really an ultimate thing that ultimately is going to make a difference? No. But it's insofar as the person, the Rambam says that, as far as it relaxes a person, I mean, you see the Nevi'im would use music to get to a certain relaxed state. So, yeah, fine. But it's a means. It's not a value per se, yes. Okay. The music in the Beis HaMikdash is tied to the idea of Tilim. And the idea of Tilim is that Tilim directs the emotions towards the true ideas. And that's why it was accompanied with music to direct the emotions towards the true ideas. And that's why it was incorporated in the Mikdash. But you have to understand, the Mikdash was really for the Hamon Am. I mean, that was the purpose of the Mikdash. The Mikdash was not, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need the base of Mikdash. So Migishtah for the Hamonam, every means was used in order to direct and channel their emotions towards God. And that was the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash. That's why they had music there, and that's why they had the Tehillim. But of course, the lyrics in Tehillim are all ideas, all very deep ideas. And this was done in order to direct the person, to channel the person towards the correct goal, which is Yedias Hashem. So the Mikdash was made for everybody. The Mikdash wasn't made just for, a matter of fact, I mean, the bigger the Talmud Chacham, the less he needs the Mikdash. Okay, what did the Rav say once? That I don't need the Beis HaMikdash. I have Masechet Zvachim. So it's a funny kind of thing, but it's a necessary thing. I mean, we have to realize we have Kedushas Yisrael. It's a whole Am, a whole nation, and you don't have a whole nation of Talmidei Chachamim. But the ideas are always correct and always on target and always proper. And the idea is that a person should channel their emotions towards God, and that was done through the Shirei David, which is Sefer Tehillim, and through the accompanying music. Okay. I would say though that I would say that you shouldn't teach a child crazy lyrics, you know, because even though they may not understand when they're children, I mean, if they're funny or so, you know, cute or whatever, that's okay. But you know, some things which are really crazy that there's no reason to have them memorize things that are, you know, that are stupid ideas.
Yeah.
What? I mean, I think a lot of them are upsetting to the child. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of, I mean, you have to really think into that. I mean, I guess most children, when you know, I mean, when I was a kid, I learned all those things. I didn't really understand what they were. I just, you know, I just remember the rhyme and the words. You never really put it together. But, I mean, well, they are very aggressive, because what if the child likes Humpty Dumpty? So they can't put them together again. It's not good. But anyways, I mean, they're stupid. I mean, I mean, if it's done in a, I mean, certain ones are funny, Jack Spratt, I mean. Okay, so if it's funny, humorous, and they like the rhyme, nothing wrong. At any rate, I don't think it's causing great harm if you do it, but anyways. I think it's bad. I know there's a big psychologist that maintains these things are good. I think they're bad, though. Bruno Bettelheim. I mean, I think he was a big psychologist. I don't think he was the deepest mind in psychology, but I think he made a big mistake on that one, that he thought that teaching the fairy tales is a good outlet for the child. I don't think so. I think teaching lies is very bad, and I think that what it does is merely that escapism is not a healthy one. It's a bad one. You have to know which escapes are good, which escapes are bad. That's a bad one. So I disagree with Bruno Bettelheim on that. I think it's bad to teach a child these fairy tales. Because he wants to maintain that the child can use it to escape into a world of fantasy and satisfy the emotions that they have, which can't be satisfied in reality. But I think it's bad, because I think the child should really, rather than do that, those emotions should not be satisfied, and they should cope with the emotions. Okay? That's what I think. And that's why I think Yadis teaches us. Al Masor is not to teach a child lies. That's Al Masor. I would trust Al Masor. Look, I haven't really, you know, I have to see them, but as far as I know, most of them are pretty harmless. Look, I can't pass judgment on something I don't know. I mean, I have to see it. Well, to balance the day, I would say, first of all, if I had an ideal school, I would have different tracks. And I would say that depends on the children, you know. Some children you can give more time to, I mean, and they can enjoy it, you know, so give them more, some less, but just in a basic plan, I would say probably about 3 to 4 hours of Limud HaKodesh, and probably about 2.5 hours of Limud HaChol. Probably would be sufficient for basic education.
Younger.
If that time is used properly, I cannot see that that would not be enough time to do as much, if not more, than what is done with a child in the situation, the normal school situation. Most of the time it's wasted, and they're not really involved in learning, and they sit there 8 hours a day, but if you look at how much time they're really learning, it's a very, very small amount of time. I think if the time were used properly, that would be more than adequate.